Hey there, good morning. I am not John Iderol, and I know that that probably makes a lot of you sad. You're gonna have to deal with it today. I am sorry, he will be back Monday, but for the rest of the week, you've got a fun cast of people filling in for him. But I am Brooke Thomas, and today is still JR Wednesdays. And so, but we have a special panel today. We've got JR here, and also civil rights attorney Sue Ann Robinson here to join us to talk about everything going on today in the news. We're talking about the abortion measure out of Alabama, a missing little girl case out of Houston that has a lot of people talking. There's a lot going on in the news today, and let's get right to it. Sound good?
I'm down.
Let's get right to it. All right. And my belt just broke on live television. It's fine. Everything's fine. All right. Okay. So the Alabama Senate actually just approved a measure that essentially outlaws almost all abortions in the state. The way they did this, the legislation bans abortion at every stage of pregnancy and criminalizes the procedure for doctors who could be charged with felonies and face up to 99 years in prison. Now, it includes an exception for cases when the mother's life is at risk, but not for cases of rape or incest. And the amendment to add rape and incest exceptions to this failed 11 to 22. And I want you to take a look at something, because New York journalist Dan Lavoie actually broke down the roll call and posted this picture of the 22 senators who voted against the exception. Take a look at that. And they all have something in common, a couple things in common.
They're all wearing ties?
They're all wearing ties.
Red ties.
None of them are women, just so we're clear. But just so you know, every woman and every person of color in the Alabama Senate, plus four white male Republicans, actually voted for adding the rape and incest exception. Those 22 voted against it. And the measure now goes to the governor's desk, and Governor Kay Ivey says she won't comment. A spokesperson for her says that she won't comment until she's had a chance to thoroughly look at the final measure that has passed. And talking about rape and incest and how important it was to a lot of people in the state and a lot of the senators who voted to have that exception in this measure, I just want to bring up something, a case that happened a couple years ago in Alabama. A 12-year-old girl actually had to take her case to the Alabama Court of Civil Appeals in order to get an abortion without parental consent, because the district attorney in her area actually objected. And this was a case where she was raped by a relative and impregnated, a 12-year-old. And she had to go to court for this and go past, you know, her local court. Also, taking this back, what this is, this measure, what this is about for these senators in Alabama, this is about getting this to Supreme Court, the Supreme Court. And they feel that Brett Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court gives them a better chance of being heard by the Supreme Court and actually getting Roe versus Wade overturned. Specifically, I want to show you this. Alabama State Senator Clyde Chambliss, a Republican, vowed that the bill would pass and reportedly told constituents at a town hall last week that the bill is a direct plan to challenge Roe versus Wade in the Supreme Court, urging the crowd there to pray for that. Just so you know, more than 300 proposals to restrict abortion were introduced in states from January to March, and that's according to the Guttmacher Institute. Georgia, Mississippi, Ohio, and Kentucky passed bills this year that ban abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected, which occurs around the sixth week of pregnancy, before most women are even aware they're pregnant. And this is according to abortion rights groups. None of these bills are in effect yet, but what we have here is a bunch of states essentially racing against each other to see whose case will be heard at the Supreme Court.
You want this first, Sue Ann, or
me? I just want laws, stricter laws on violence against women in the first place. Like, I don't know why we're so caught up on this issue and why the legislature, there's 300 different proposals regarding abortion. It's, you know, there's bigger fish to fry with respect to actual violence against women. There's so many rapists that are, you know, getting out of custody, that are doing very little time in jail, if time at all. And so I think the legislature should be focusing on protecting women and deterring violence against women, as opposed to governing this particular situation. Alabama is definitely posturing for the Supreme Court. They definitely want to test Brett Kavanaugh's chops and see what the Supreme Court is like, which is why the notorious RBG feels like she has to hang in there with one lung and one kidney and whatever she can do, because she's like, feels like she's the one standing. Like, she's the last one standing that knows the precedent and has the historical value in the institution to kind of,
you know, she's the gatekeeper at this point.
So when it's clear what's happening, and then they're saying it very openly.
Right.
So this imaginary legislation, excuse me, is put in place so they can get to the Supreme Court. So they can challenge Roe v. Wade at the Supreme Court, which by the way isn't even guaranteed. I'm not sure if they know this, they're legislators, but the Supreme Court doesn't have to hear just because you said, hey, here I am.
Right.
Because, you know, and what about all these folks that have a problem with anything that happens in our society? Should we just say, hey, Supreme Court, you should hear me because I said so?
Right.
No, so if you cobble enough people with imaginary, stupid legislation together, thinking you can punish enough people that the Supreme Court will hear it, it doesn't guarantee you that. So what it ends up doing is just punishing people in these states, specifically in these states, and your constituents that voted for you, you punish them so you can get to this end game that isn't even guaranteed. So if anybody's running against any of these folks that are making these laws, just speak about how they're actually not doing anything for the people.
Right.
So when they run and say, I'm here to do this for the people, and it's like, actually, do you believe in the legislation that you were passing last month, whenever it happens? Or do you believe in trying to do something further so you can have some kind of political agenda to maybe help you out with other folks? One more thing. Brett Kavanaugh, that entire hearing where you have Lindsey Graham, the entire Republican Party railing against how horrible this man is being treated. How dare you do this to a good, decent man? They don't care either. All they care about is like, let's get one more of these guys in here that's gonna do our bidding because we're gonna start pushing through all kinds of things. We talked about how Mitch McConnell was blocking everything Obama did with judges and his nominees from federal levels all the way up. And of course, we saw with the Supreme Court. That's the only reason that these Republicans, which we saw and is documented, hated this president, Trump, and before he became president, but now he's in, like, well, let's use him to carry out all of our horrible policies. So keep in mind, all of these Republicans, they want this from the bottom to the top, from these state legislators to you got guys in the Senate and in the House. They want this and they'll do anything they can to get it.
Yeah, I definitely feel like they need to, you know, maybe peruse the Constitution, maybe even swing by Broadway and watch Hamilton, because there's a separation of powers for a reason, for this specific reason, so that a group of people in the legislature cannot get together and just try to push through things. That's the reason why there's a separation of powers. They feel more empowered, obviously, because they feel like, hey, we have Brett Kavanaugh. But there's still a process, as you said, to get heard by the Supreme Court and get to that level. You know, the Supreme Court is rejecting cases all day, every day. Yeah. And, you know, that's part of their job, too, is to sift through the cases and see what needs to be heard and what they can decide. I think that the problem for me and what I think is the biggest legal issue is that they're creating a fracture among the states. So, no, there isn't a uniform law on abortion federally. But when you have this issue where in Alabama it's a problem, but it's not a problem next door in another state, then you force people to have to leave from their home areas to get healthcare that they're seeking in these situations. And it could be a dangerous situation, make it more expensive. The idea is to put more and more burden on a woman who prospectively is, you know, already in a negative situation. So, you know, I think that they would stand to have a civics lesson on what the judiciary is and what the purpose is and how that works and understand that. I think the idea behind the whole, everything that the Republicans are doing right now is just to create a narrative, to push a narrative. And this is one of their, you know, flagship narratives.
That narrative is to restrict women's rights to control over their own body, because it's hard to even call this pro-life legislation because a lot of these senators aren't necessarily pro-life as they're strong supporters of the death penalty, which seems to just by definition go against the idea of being pro-life if you're in support of killing someone as punishment. And there was something that you said that I think also is important to know. These women also already in a lot of these states don't have easy access to abortion anyway.
I mean, no disrespect to Alabama.
Right.
It's Alabama.
Exactly. All right. Should we take a break?
You know, one more thing on Governor Ivey, just to sift through what they're really saying. I know we only have a few seconds. She said she's going to look at this final measure carefully. You know what that means? I mean, let me go ahead and assume, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't know what she really thinks. But what I think it's saying is, I'm gonna look at it and weigh the political ramifications of which way I go with this. You're not gonna look at it carefully.
Right.
You're gonna read it carefully and you haven't decided, you don't know where you stand on this whole abortion, pro-life versus pro-choice issue that's been carried out for decades. You don't know yet.
Right.
You're not sure what you're gonna do in this particular legislation. No,
right.
You're gonna
You've
figure out whether or not you can do it or not.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's gonna look bad for you.
Absolutely. I think it's just really important for people to be engaged and be involved. Like, you know, Young Turks viewers are very engaged. I think people need to be more engaged on this issue. But part of me says, you know, it's a distraction of other things we have going on. But this is obviously very important. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Be right back in a few minutes to talk about other big stories going on in America today.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Hey there, welcome back to the Damage Report with John Iadarola. I'm Brooke Thomas filling in for John this morning. We're doing something a little different today. We've got a full panel this morning. JR Wednesdays, so of course, JR is here in the studio.
Man, let's just keep it going, I'm just saying.
Exactly, and we've got civil rights attorney Sue Ann Robinson here talking about a couple things. And I'm, you know, pretty excited to be able to ask you a couple questions about this next story because it has a lot of people talking and it's horrifying. But there's a lot of moving parts in this, so let's get right to it. Police in Texas are still looking for 4-year-old Malia Davis. Now, she's been missing since April 30th, and that's when her stepfather told police he had been kidnapped, and she was kidnapped by two men who knocked him out and then took her. Police later charged the stepfather, his name is Darian Vince, with tampering with a human corpse in connection to the little girl's disappearance. Her mother, Brittany Bowens, admits that he was physically abusive to both her and her daughter, but she didn't have the strength and courage to report the abuse. She says she was abused as a child and taught to live with that, and now realizes she should have done more to protect her daughter. And so, you know, lots of questions going on about this, and a lot of, right now, a lot of people are wondering, will there be a murder indictment? Police have charged her stepfather with mishandling of a corpse, but no one has been charged with murder. And is it normal, is it something that happens to have a murder indictment? Can you file murder charges without a body?
You can file murder charges without a body. The issue I think right now for the state attorney is that they're just trying, they're getting a grand jury together because there's evidence, there's blood in the car, you know, there's video footage showing him with the laundry basket, with a gas tank and all these things. So they're putting all the pieces together for the grand jury, I think, to bring that murder charge shortly. I think just in recent times, the state attorney is like, or district attorney, depending on where, is being, they're being very cautious and very careful when they're charging people because you just don't want a case like this that has so much media attention and obviously a little girl's life has been lost where, you know, the person, there's a technicality. And also I think too, you know, the mother is still kind of holding out hope that maybe her daughter's gonna be found. I saw an interview where she said she thinks, you know, she's probably dead, but she's still looking for her. So they're still in the midst of looking. So you can, to answer your question, there is murder charges where there's no body. That's not the issue. I think the issue at this point is they haven't relinquished that search. And if they have him in custody, a suspect in custody, it's possible that he could tell them where the body is or where he put the body, you know, at any time, and then that would end the search as well.
The details of this were so sad. As it continued on, and as they talked about what he said happened, and how it fell apart, and the evidence that they found in his car and in his apartment, and in videos and pictures, and the last known image of the little girl, and everything, and just the history he had with her, and then continue on with her mom, and she was out of town for her father's funeral, I believe, not grandfather's,
the mother,
but father's, and it all, it's so, which then ended up sparking questions about what else she could have done, because he snapped when she exposed him for pictures, lewd pictures he was sending online to other men. And so then that's when he lost it. And then once he lost it, she leaves town. So a lot of people are angry with her.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if you're getting the details of that.
Go for it.
But in that part, then people start wanting to go after her specifically. And I can understand that feeling. I just wonder if we need to start nipping these things earlier.
So, yeah, I think there's a situation where, you know, Malia, unfortunately, is one of those kids, and there's a lot of kids across the country that fall through the cracks, right? So in August, DCF is investigating that her and the parents, and both of the kids were actually taken away in August because she had a severe head wound, and it was investigated, and then they gave the kids back to them. So it's just the situation where it's so tough because the kids are so young. And so a lot of times when children are victims of crimes, the current system doesn't allow for that in terms of doesn't allow for them to be witnesses on their own behalf. And there's a lot of psychology out there, especially in criminal cases, that say that, you know, children are not reliable witnesses. They make up things, they have imaginations, etc., which sets up a situation where if you're a child of a certain age and you're saying, hey, I'm being abused, somebody's doing something to me, you're reporting to a teacher that's reporting to DCF, then it all comes in a circle because, well, you're not reliable as a witness. And then your mom is not reporting it. So who do you go to? And then it ends in, unfortunately, a situation like this. So there has to be something done, I think, with either with the programs that are meant to catch these kids and help these kids, or there has to be something done at a higher level in terms of the way the criminal justice system deals with kids as victims of crimes.
So let's talk about her mother, Malia's mother, Brittany Bowens, because she admits that she says her ex-fiance, the stepfather that's been charged in this, was abusive to the little girl, to her in the past. In every court appearance, she's faced with protesters and people want her charged. Is that something that could happen and why? And I want to know, is it a normal thing for alleged abuse victims to be charged when children are harmed?
Absolutely. There's statutes, depending on what state, you know, that she could be charged for child endangerment, basically, for exposing her child in that situation. Many states, especially with respect to child and welfare departments, have mandatory reporting. So if you know that a child is being abused and you don't report it, then that in and of itself is a violation of a crime, is a crime. So she definitely could be looking at charges herself for what's gone on, which is unfortunate in a situation where if what she's saying is true, like she was abused and this is how, you know, kind of like her psychological process dealt with it, and now she has the loss of a child, and then she's gonna have to be, you know, facing her own charges as well. It's there's no one wins here, you know, and that's why I think, you know, if there's better ways to protect children in terms of reporting when they're actually reporting, or some better structure in place to protect Malia when she initially was taken away, then, you know, we wouldn't be here.
You mentioned, Suleyne, the Violence Against Women's Act in the last block where we were talking about abortion rights. And it goes back to this, and we listed 21 or 22 state legislators who voted against the provision that was gonna for rape and incest, the provision for rape and incest to not allow that part. But we talked about the Violence Against Women's Act before, and guess who? The same type of people voted against that too. So the outrage that comes with what begins this woman, the mother, Ms. Bowen, she was abused as a kid, wasn't protected. And the cycle continues. So she has these detrimental effects on her psyche and her approach to things like this because no one ever protected her either. And when we try to put in place things, I get the frustration with the mother and her part in this, but we don't, account for the folks who are doing the act. Mm-hmm. You know, how dare you put your child in that situation, but then how dare you go in and find the situation and put the child back into it. Now, again, I get there's all those parameters to it. The kid in foster care sucks. It's really hard to deal with, and that causes things for the child too. But when we're not serious about protecting women, children, men that are sometimes abused, it doesn't give us a good platform to stand on when you say, you know, she should have done something. If she does something, you're not going to do anything to follow up on what she did. And it's frustrating.
And the whole system doesn't work. And I would like to see a place where, as a society, we're supporting Bowen in the sense that we're supporting her mental health issue. Mm-hmm. That is a mental health issue. Because a lot of times
battered
I feel like
syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of times, you know, especially in recent times where there's a lot of mass shootings, they're quick to say, hey, well, this person had this mental issue and that's what led to this, and maybe their parents or they didn't have a father, etc. And they're totally not absolved of the crime, but you're allowed to say that this is what led to XYZ. Whereas here, people are judging her no matter what. They're like, we don't care if you had, you know, a horrible upbringing or whatever was going on with you, you should have been protecting your child. And I think it's not fair. I think the stigma should definitely, you know, be taken off of a mother in that particular situation with battered woman syndrome.
I have one more question, more about the stepfather. So his bond initially was set at $1 million. And so he had his attorney go in, and his attorney was able to get that reduced to $45,000. And we're having this national conversation about cash bail and bail, and learning that bail amounts aren't supposed to be punitive. Mm-hmm. They are supposed to be, you know, decided upon the level of like how much someone is likely to show up for court.
Right.
Do you think legally that was a good decision in this case?
Yeah, I think the issue and what the judge is going to look at is, does he have somewhere to go? Does he have money to get anywhere? Does he have a passport? What are his ties to the community? And is it likely that he's going to try to run? That's kind of generally what the courts look at. So making his bail $45,000 or $1 million really it's not the amount per se. It matters to him because he has to post 10% of that, right? He has to get 10% of that in order to be released from custody. I think in this particular type of crime, you know, his bond absolutely should be $1 million because he knows what he did. You know, the evidence is there. And I don't want to convict him before he's proven guilty, but I think the idea is that, you know, if he's out, he's able to assist in his own defense and things like that. And that's why people do talk about cash bail a lot, because a lot of times you can't assist in your own defense if you're in custody. Mm-hmm. So I think in this particular case though, where, you know, it's highly, you know, there's a lot of evidence against him, a lot of times there is a hearing where that's determined, the level of violence inflicted in the crime and the probability that he would escape the jurisdiction. There's a hearing for that, and then the judge makes that determination. So,
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, come back in a few minutes, talking about, there's a lot more news happening. We're gonna touch on what's going on in Florida regarding allowing convicted felons to vote once they have served their time. A bit of a change has happened there. So we'll be right back. Hey there, welcome back to The Damage Report. I'm Brooke Thomas filling in for John Adirola today. He'll be back Monday. We've got a panel today. JR is here on JR Wednesdays, of course.
It'll become what, Sue Ann Saturdays? Sue Ann Sunday.
Right? Yeah, I could take another day of the Damage Report. And Sue Ann Robinson here joining us on the panel. All right, let's get right to what's going on in the news. So Republican Senator Mitt Romney actually voted against Trump Tuesday, as he became the only GOP senator to vote against Michael Truncale to be district court judge in Texas. This is his response to his vote here. He says, he said some things disparaging of President Obama, and having been the Republican nominee in 2012, I couldn't sign on to that for a district judge. This is what Romney told CNN when he was asked why he voted against him, who also, you should know, was successfully confirmed in a 49-46 vote despite the senator's opposition. Now, Truncale has come under scrutiny for having described Obama as an un-American imposter in remarks in 2011. Just reminding you, this is a judge. Senator Dianne Feinstein asked him about those comments, and he responded in writing, saying, "It is possible that I was merely expressing frustration by what I perceived as a lack of overt patriotism on behalf of President Obama." What do you all think about Romney voting against and his reasons? Do you buy that? No, I
think he probably has something personal going on with Truncale. Like something happened at the golf club, something happened at the country club, something happened between them two. Because Mittens does not care about Barack Obama. I don't get that vibe. Like he's like, oh, how could you say that this thing? Like we have a whole president that charged a narrative that the president wasn't even American.
Right.
You know, like, so I don't think that's the root of Mitt Romney's issues.
And you vote with the guy a significant percentage of the time, as far as Mitt Romney voting with Trump, who he doesn't like so much. But okay, you know, these guys aren't stupid. So sometimes when they're talking about Mitt Romney in this particular case, when he's talking about being a nominee as I was in 2012, it makes me not want to say mean things about the guy that beat me during the times when I was saying mean things about the guy that beat me. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So is it some kind of hidden message, or is he just putting out a statement without much thought to it? Just saying, yeah, let's just say something because I have to say something. And I don't really care. I just don't like this guy.
He's like, I just don't want to say that he beat me in our like draft pick game or whatever. I don't want to talk about
that.
He took
the last piece of caviar.
He didn't invite me to Christmas dinner. Whatever their little personal issue is, obviously he's flexing something. Or he really just wanted to have a story. You know, he want because he knew he was going to get confirmed anyway. And he was like, let me just be the odd man out.
Yeah, that could have been that too. And then whatever he has plans in the future for, he's just like, you remember that time I voted against that federal judge?
Remember
one more thing. Also, whenever they talk about now this is on to the judge, I was frustrated that he didn't show enough patriotism. Why is it whenever you get caught up as a Republican, I was just frustrated. It's okay, just let it be. Or I was joking. Trump does it all the time.
Right.
You know, I was just joking when I said I want an extra term in office, an extra 2 years to my term because you guys screwed me over. It's always joking and fun, but you know what? When people complain about police brutality, when they complain about healthcare and you taking rights away from people, oh yeah, why are you guys whining and crying? Hey, we're just frustrated, and I'm just joking when I said I want to do something about it.
Right.
But it sticks with certain folks, and it doesn't stick with them when they say, I was just frustrated, let it go, whatever.
Right, they should still be in charge.
You're frustrated about patriotism, but people being frustrated about death, you should let that go.
Right, absolutely.
All right, let's move on to Florida, because Republican leaders in Florida have actually found a way to get around Amendment 4, which was passed by voters, of course. And if you don't remember, Amendment 4 restores voting rights of Floridians with felony convictions after they complete all terms of their sentence. And the amendment, just so you know, does not apply to convictions of murder or sexual offenses. Republicans in the state legislature, this happened last week, they passed this new bill making regaining the vote conditional on having first fully repaid any outstanding fines and fees, including ones not related to their felony conviction. Now, the bill that the governor is expected to sign into law establishes blatant wealth discrimination in the restoration of rights process. The bill will create two classes of returning citizens. And under this bill, your ability to pay will govern whether you can participate in democracy. Currently, there is no way for returning citizens to know exactly how much they owe. This also makes it basically impossible to estimate how many people would be affected by the legislation, though it is likely hundreds of thousands. And last thing here, this measure also creates a chilling effect, experts say, that will keep thousands of people who are potentially eligible to vote from ever registering out of fear and could feed a voter fraud myth often perpetuated by the right.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so you're talking about the chilling effect, because also there's people who don't know the details of the law.
Right.
I mean, I don't, but then like especially in depth, that's why we have here. I mean, even as far as just minor things people have done, maybe they paid their fine, maybe they spent a night in jail, whatever happened, maybe they had DUI and they're like, man, I wonder if this affects me. People don't know how it works.
Yeah, I think that definitely, you know, this is voter suppression at its finest, at its highest level, in the sense that, you know, allow the convicted felons, and so it wouldn't be DUIs necessarily, but allow convicted felons to have this whole restoration of rights and have this whole victory, right? So everybody's like, yay! And then they're like, there's a catch. And I think the idea is not to, and I think we should have rigorous discussion about these legislators, what they're doing, what their motives are, why would they be trying to suppress voters, people that are re-entering. But I think we need to work on a strategy to make sure that the people who are returning are they're eligible, they get registered to vote, we're finding out how much they owe, and getting it paid and getting it done. You have to have a strategy to overcome that. I'm happy to talk about, you know, the issues with it and the problems. It's obvious. It's obvious voter suppression. It's obvious posturing for 2020. It's obvious what's happening. I mean, they're making the assumption that every single convicted felon is possibly a Democrat and gonna, you know, be the swing voters of the state of Florida, which is unreasonable. And so the idea is to suppress their vote, is to have people say, oh no, I don't want to go vote because, you know, I could end up with charges if I'm voting improperly and not voting. I don't know, I'm not sure. So I think it's on the people who got the Restoration of Rights bill passed to really hone in on their constituents, find out what is owed, find out what the steps are going to be to get them registered to vote and get it done so that we're not dealing with this in 2020, so that this plot is not successful.
And you know what's, I think, frustrating for a lot of people is the voters, the residents of Florida made a decision and they said, hey, people who are citizens of this state, of this country, should not be disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. And so we think once you serve your time, you should have the right to vote. And then GOP lawmakers were able to say, we don't think so.
But those people were voted in too. So you have to understand, these are elected officials making a decision on what the populace had already voted on.
Right.
So the idea is that the same people that voted for rights restoration were not calling their representatives and saying, do not vote for this. I do not want this. If you vote for this, I will not vote for you again. There's not enough at stake. Obviously, there was not enough at stake for them not to pass this bill to basically cut through the restoration of rights.
All right, we will take another quick break and be right back with Trump on the Green New Deal and Fox on AOC again. Hey there, welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm Brooke Thomas, filling in for John today. We've got J.R. Jackson in here, and it's J.R. Wednesdays, of course. Mm-hmm. You've got to be here. And civil rights attorney Sue Ann Robinson, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so
good to be here on JR Wednesday.
On JR Wednesdays, exactly. Got a couple of, I think, interesting stories I want you guys to react to. First up, during a speech to energy workers in Louisiana, the president had some interesting things to say about the Green New Deal. Check this out.
And now they talk about the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal, everybody go home, you just lost your jobs. The Green New Deal is, that's a hoax like the hoax I just went through. I'm not even sure, it might be a bigger one. And mine was pretty big, mine was unlimited. Think of it, the Green New Deal, under that deal, I didn't have this, this isn't down. But John Kennedy, Bill, under that deal, everybody in this room gets fired.
A lie about the Green New Deal, one, and then also like still finding a way to slip in the Russia no collusion into every single conversation.
You know, I don't know if the solution is to start lying into the same degree that they do. And it's, by the way, it's not just him. He's not the only one who's saying blatant things about the Green New Deal. So, you know, maybe when the Republican tax bill went across, you know, maybe elected officials, Democrats specifically, should have come out and said, you know what this tax bill does? You know what it does? You're gonna have to pay 100% of your income if you make under $50,000 a year. I just talked to the president, just say blatant lies because it's the same thing. So then, and say it collectively. So that eventually Republicans have to say, hey, that's crazy. No, it's not. And be like, so can you tell me the truthfulness about the Green New Deal? Since we're like, put it on a platform of, we're all gonna lie now, and you're gonna have to defend yourself against it. Mm-hmm. And then we can start having the debate about how to piece together the realities of each of these bills.
That's all you can do.
Also,
then who else is gonna listen? I don't understand how people sit there and listen to that. I guarantee you, a large percent of that crowd is sitting there going,
what?
Really?
I'm gonna lose.
I guess.
Because the Green, what?
This truth about the Tax Act, though, was bad enough. And Democrats were just telling the truth about it.
Yeah,
and that wasn't enough. It was bad enough.
Yeah.
People weren't listening until they did their taxes and or lost their jobs. And I just, what's interesting on this is that he's, you know, telling all these people, every single one of you, you're gonna be fired. And just like forgetting to say,
because everything is the apprentice. That's the issue. Everything
so
is the apprentice.
Not going to point out that every single one of you, you will have an earth to live on.
Right.
You know?
Darn. Who wants an earth when
Who wants
now
an
can
earth?
We go to the moon anyway? So aren't they putting that in place? You know, the thing is, I don't think the solution is to lie. I just think the solution is to jazz up the narrative and to really have a message and really hone it, like really hone it and own it. I think, you know, a lot of times he just wins because he has a soundbite that sounds good. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are uneducated that are listening to him. And a lot of things, as we know, marketing, you know, purchases, political choices are based off emotion. And so if you don't have a strong narrative that's going to resonate with your constituents, then you're always going to have a problem. That's why he walks around just saying random things like awesome and great. And you're like, why is he saying that? He's messaging to his base and his constituency constantly. That's why he's constantly talking about the Russia collusion thing, because he feels like it's a win. It's a win for him and it's a win for his constituents. And so that's why he's constantly reassuring them that, hey, we're winners, you're winners, we're winners. Look how we won with this. We're going to win in 2020. So I just think that everyone needs to start to work on their narratives and get it strong and say, look, we don't have to lie. We just have to point out. And I feel like last time I was here, we were still even partially in media and people who are explaining, you know, the Trump effect and what he does. We were scared to call him liar. Mm-hmm. Like the word lie was not allowed. It was like, well, he's misrepresenting as it's unfolded.
Right.
Over these 2 years, now we're just like, he lies. Oh my God, lie, 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 lie. So I think we need to continue to evolve and figure out a way to really combat what he's doing. Because I think in the beginning, when you're just looking at the behavior, you know, we were just trying to figure it out. It was like, what? What's going on? Is he confused? No, he's lying. We're there, okay?
Right.
Let's figure out how we're gonna combat that.
All right, so next story, Fox News host Dagan McDowell went what HuffPost is calling full-on mean girl to insult AOC while talking about whether the Congresswoman's endorsement would benefit Democratic presidential hopefuls like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. Take a look.
Juan, first up, does her endorsement matter if you're trying to win the White House? She is a socialist from New York City. She photographs well and she speaks with her hands, but beyond that, does she matter?
Yeah, she matters.
So you hear Juan there at the end. Yeah, she matters. That conversation wasn't going where she wanted, so she doubled down on her insult. Take a look.
AOC, just very quickly, the idea that we're all talking about the Green New Deal environmental policy, that's her doing.
But as a laughing stock.
I will make you feel better.
So.
Beauty fades, stupid's forever.
Well, I can't argue
that. That's not directed at you.
And you could never be too skinny or too rich. Like, let's just say random things. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, let's get a soundbite out there. She's a congresswoman,
right?
For God's sakes. Yes, she matters. Who are you to say that a congresswoman doesn't matter? Like, you were not elected. You were just hired. Like, get it together.
Right.
She must matter because they can't stop talking about her. You know, they keep talking about everything she does, the policies she does. She matters in their brain because they're afraid of her. They can't stop talking because the things that she says and the way that she says it, it generates attention and energy. And they go, you know what? I like that idea. You know who doesn't talk about how AOC looks? People who support her.
Right.
I'm sure there's some, but they don't go, hey man, you know what? That whole Green New Deal looks good because she looks good.
Right.
That's what Republicans do. Talk about, okay, hate to say it, but let's talk about stupid and John McCain and not him particularly.
Right.
But in 08.
His daughter will come after you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we're talking about how, stupid stays and good looks go away, whatever the hell line it was. That she said, we saw the reasons why Republicans supported John McCain. Not because he picked some random person to run as vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, we know what they were doing. I forget who it was. It was Mike Ditka. I hate to bring him in, but old football coach. He loves him some Sarah Palin.
Which I don't understand.
I couldn't have been because of her policies. No one liked her because of her policies, because she didn't have any policies.
Right.
It was all put in place. They said, oh man, look at this good looking woman. Let's put her in place and all these Republicans will vote for her. It didn't really work, but that's the game plan. They think everyone else does it.
And the thing is, with the whole mean girl thing, it goes back to who their constituents are and who the base is and who's watching Fox News, respectfully, okay? You know, we're talking about policies. We're talking about the Green New Deal. You're talking about a congresswoman. And the best you could come up with is, oh, well, she'll be ugly soon.
I just say, they act like her, like cultural names are a struggle, and that's a struggle for a lot of people, right? So when a black woman is named Lakeisha, or when they have to, they act like they stutter over Ocasio-Cortez. I don't ever want to hear anything about Lakeisha if y'all can pronounce Dagan.
Listen, Tchaikovsky.
Like, you know what I mean? Come on. All right, we're going to take another quick break.
Sorry, you know what? One more thing, last thing, really fast. The most uncomfortable seat on Outnumbered, outside of the name of that show, is the guy who sits in the middle and has to manspread right in the middle. If you guys have a still of what he, I don't know if every guy does it because I don't watch the show, but I've noticed it's very, you gotta sit there with your tie covering your crotch.
Does
he have because
to
there's no like armrest, there's no way you can lean. They sit the guy in the middle, obviously.
He also doesn't have to be there and be. That's
and her beauty too. Has already faded. Like,
all right, okay, we're gonna take a break.
We'll talk about AOC.
We'll be right back. Hey there, I'm Brooke Thomas filling in for John this morning on the Damage Report. And guess what? This is my first time doing this, so bear with me, but it is time for Meanwhile In. All right, so meanwhile on planet Earth, nearly 200 countries have made the decision to do something about plastic waste, and the US decided to make the decision to sit out of that decision. All right, the governments of 187 countries have agreed to control the movement of plastic waste between national borders in an effort to curb the world's plastic crisis, but the US was not among them. The US has been sending its plastic waste to various countries around the world, including China and Malaysia, but has recently faced crackdowns in those countries as they attempt to cope with the amount of plastic flooding through their border. Shocked the US has not ratified this deal?
We are. Don't we have paper straws now? Oh, I thought we were,
we were doing
paper straws.
Is that enough?
Okay, so I'm gonna admit something on air. I'm not huge on recycling, but I feel like this is total vindication for me not being as vigilant because all these people that I have some people in my neighborhood that are like super recyclers, okay? Like super. And basically what they're doing with the recycling is selling it, sending it to China and then China's dumping it in the ocean. And I'm like, you wasted all your time rinsing out that milk jug because guess what? It's still in the ocean. I just need us, you know, to get it together.
You and I would be Come beefing on, guys. As neighbors. Just saying.
Yeah. Get it together.
I'm one of them.
I know, you're recycling. I'm recycling. I'm just not as vigilant.
I feel you.
But they're dumping it in the ocean anyway. What's going on?
What's going on? Mm-hmm. All right, meanwhile in... Yeah, this is actually a tough story. I shouldn't have been smiling there because meanwhile in Germany, a horrifying discovery actually. A chambermaid cleaning rooms on the second floor of a Bavarian bed and breakfast in the southern German city of Passau, did I say that right? Found three dead people impaled on long arrows in one of the rooms. Now, none of the guests reported hearing any strange noises overnight, according to the local press, though a violent storm and the raging river next to the guest house may have muffled any noise. So someone killed three people with a crossbow.
Is she being called a chambermaid because it's Germany? Isn't it?
That was weird. That stuck out to me first.
Well, did it? Chambermaid. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Hey, this is really bad.
Yeah.
People's crossbows in 2019. I guess it's quiet.
I don't understand. Well, I don't know. Well, there has to be some leads. We talk about how, you know, I watch Forensic Files.
Okay.
And there's just usually they follow the trail, look for the forensics, and you can find the murder. But something like this seems like it'd be easier. It's not like
how many people have crossbows? How many people are proficient in crossbowing?
Hotel room. You don't have to shoot from across unless it's a long shot.
That's crazy.
Outside.
Not taking Germany off my list.
You're taking it off. Right? It's scary. All right. Meanwhile, in. New Zealand. I love that opener there. I love that. New Zealand is pretty. The country has declared itself actually the first in the world to measure its success by its people's well-being. They've decided to make child poverty, domestic violence, and mental health priorities as part of New Zealand's well-being budget. All right, Tuesday, Grant Robertson said, despite New Zealand's rock star economy, many New Zealanders were being left behind with home ownership at a 60-year low, the suicide rate climbing, and homelessness and food aid grants on the rise. Robertson cited a cultural rehabilitation program for high-security prisoners aimed at reducing high rates of recidivism and reoffending as the kind of project that would be prioritized in the budget. One last thing, sure, We had and have GDP growth rates that many other countries around the world envied. But for many New Zealanders, this GDP growth has not translated into higher living wages, living standards, or better opportunities. How could we be a rock star with homelessness, child poverty, and inequality on the rise? New Zealand getting it right again.
They need to be more like us. We need more guns, more beer, more bald eagles, and then they'll be fine.
Aren't the Maori the indigenous people of New Zealand? Mm-hmm. So they're the ones that are suffering.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're doing something about it.
Okay.
All right, we got it. We have to go. This has been the Damage Report. Filling in for John today, JR Wednesdays.
Yes.
Thanks for watching.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you.
Me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.